and thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Tal Mandelbaum. Hello. And today, as a part of our show, we'd like to take a look at a very unique phenomena happening in Israel, the kibbutz. From its very start and to this day, it's a very interesting phenomena that projects on the life of all of us as an Israeli society. Be with us. It's going to be really interesting. Tal, please. No doubt that the kibbutz is an amazing and very unique phenomenon that exists only in Israel. I personally was a part of the Shomer HaTzair youth movement, and this is how I came to know the idealistic and cooperative ideals and values. And I became very much acquainted with this movement that speaks about values. And soon I'm going to marry my spouse, who he himself is a kibbutz member. He grew up in a kibbutz. And I got exposed through him to the life of the kibbutz today, which is very different than the life in the city, the kindness, the connection between people, that you can stop for coffee spontaneously. And this is at least something that exists in part of the kibbutzes. And from conversations with people, I felt that there is something good there. And I'd personally like to talk about it, better understand it. How was it built? Why specifically here in Israel? And what is its future here in Israel, especially that we see broad processes of change and direction of capitalism and individualism? And this also influences the life in the kibbutz. And today there's a feeling that unless we keep it and strengthen the values of mutuality and collectiveness, they'll simply disappear. And if to take a look at how it all began, we know that at the beginning of the previous century, there were many pogroms and anti-Semitism in Europe, and groups of young Jewish people started coming to Israel. They wanted to build the land of Israel. They believed in working the land, and they started building something that was called a kvutza, a group, and only in the 20s it became the concept known as the kibbutz, and the first group was the Dganya group, near the Kinneret. These were very simple young people that really believed in the communal idea, which means that everyone got an equal salary, so-called each according to his ability, to each according to his needs. And they really held on to this idea, even though that there were voices that said that it's not according to human nature and it won't work. Nonetheless, they worked really hard. They dried swamps, really impressive people. Recently, I was at the Kinneret Cemetery. There is the grave of Rachel, the poet there. And I got this sense of nostalgia. And I thought about those people, the young people that built this country, and the kibbutz movement really participated in the army and building the government. They were really the foundation on which the Zionist country was built on. And till about 1949, the kibbutzes really prospered, and they were about 8% of the Israeli population. And we can say that what really kept them together was the hard reality they lived in, both in terms of security before the establishment of the State of Israel and economically wise. And it created the conditions for it to be a really beneficial way of living. And when these things started to dissipate, then the kibbutzes also started experiencing hardships. Till the 80s, more and more people started leaving. In the 80s, there was a very big economical crisis, and we can say that the idea of the kibbutz experienced a very serious crisis, and also capitalistic values started entering the kibbutz, and people became exposed to the, so to speak, outside world. And we see that most of the kibbutzes today are undergoing different processes of privatization and so on. So first of all, I'd like to ask about the phenomena itself. The communal idea that grew here in Israel, established by those young people that wanted to promote the future of the Jewish people. How do you see this idea? First of all, we have to understand, where does it all come from? it doesn't come from a good life. It came as a result of Jews in Russia, especially in southern Russia, in the Ukraine, lived under very hard conditions, in small places, without work. You can't leave that place. It's like a ghetto. It's not really a ghetto, but you can't simply move and live in the city or something. No such thing. You're tied to your place, and you have to live there. Poverty. If there is work, very hard work, for pennies, and so on and so forth. There were very harsh events, acts of hatred from the surrounding environment, and therefore it gave rise to the movement of Bilu and others, depending on the times we're talking about. But suppose if we're talking about the end of the 19th century, that actually being the beginning of the movement, then they came as a result of it being impossible to develop, to change your place of living, to work in anything else but to be closed in those places they lived in. And therefore they came into being and came here. The lack of hope of remaining there and achieving anything. Still, people live and their desire changes. They can no longer remain in the same place without realizing themselves. The time has come for them to develop, for the general development, the different revolutions that the entire world is going through, becoming more democratic, and in Russia, they still had no opportunity of doing anything but leaving there and going to the land of Israel. And they came here and they built the kibbutzes. There were also others, but they came here and built the kibbutzes for several reasons. That because of the lack of means, when they were together, they got help. Also from the rich, from the Europeans, and from the Americans that kept them. Because they wanted to build something. It's not an individual person, but it's a body. And the other thing is that they had ideals that developed from Marx and Herzl. And around that, there were many theories and an entire philosophy of how to do it. And the general development of that generation gave birth to many people with the kibbutz spirit, I'd say a communal spirit. The spirit of collectiveness burned in them. And this is how they built it. While they were building their life and around them, there was nothing, wilderness, very hard to survive, but only together. Then it worked, and they put in a lot. They really worked hard, both in drying the swamps, and it was very hot. They really built things from scratch. In terms of investment, they really invested a lot. And they came to good results. And in those years, the country really owed them a lot because they put in their part in building the country. But the problem is that with all of their ideals, and as much as they wanted to pass it on to the young generation, the young generation already thought differently in a more individual, capitalistic direction, egoistic direction. And this is something that happened gradually throughout several generations, because if the kibbutzes started at the end of the 19th century till they came to the real crisis, that was in the midst of the 20th century and even later. Let's put it this way. A person develops out of his egoistic desire, out of the will to receive delight and pleasure, which is our nature. And with all of the good ideals that were there, all those ideals were also built on that very same desire to enjoy life in the best possible way. And so it was clear to them that together is good. First of all, because they're together, that they're close, that everything's mutual, that there's mutual support, connection. Many of the things that grow from the ego, we start thinking that it does not belong to our ego, that it belongs to some exalted ideal, that it comes to us from maybe some spiritual elevation which belongs to the human level, that it's a contribution, man's contribution to the country and to his society. As it says, it's good to die for our country and so on. But still, all these things, they're built on our simple substance, which is the will to enjoy. And therefore, there's no other calculation here but what's more and what's less beneficial. And since our desire changes from generation to generation quantitatively and especially qualitatively, then when the new generation came, they no longer had the same ideals. They didn't come from those countries where they were suppressed, Russia, the Ukraine, and so on, where life was very hard. They didn't escape pogroms and so on, but they grew up here, they were born here, the young generation. They saw hard work, and they didn't compare it with how it was there abroad. And they didn't go through the same decisions that it's necessary to come to the land of Israel with these ideals. And they saw that in the meantime, on the outside, there's a different life, a better life that's forming, even though that there was the Turkish mandate and the English mandate. Still, people relatively got along better than in the kibbutz. It was especially freer, and this is something that attracted them, that you can do what you want, you don't owe anyone, you don't have to get up when you're told and go and so on, even though that you have everything, but it's not yours. They started preferring the capitalistic direction. And they disconnected from the kibbutzes, meaning the appreciation of the collective life, those same ideals were not passed on to them. And it's not that it's their fault, but it's simply that if the desire of the younger generation, when children are born, they're not born with the same ideals as the fathers. And so, you can't do anything. And the mistake that they did make, that maybe they could have survived in a better way, were they to circulate the idea of the kibbutz in the city, outside the kibbutz, meaning, and they would have allowed their children to leave freely. You want to go? Please. But if you leave, you don't come back. Like anyone else, not because your parents are here and you were born in a kibbutz, you have special privileges or something. None. Were they to allow this diffusion, the move from the kibbutz outwards, but also from outside, people with the same ideals could come inside, then I think that they could have survived. Maybe not for long, but still, with the new spirit, they would have done something. I think that their problem was that even though that they were communal, but it was very egoistic. They locked themselves inside. They didn't allow anyone to come in. And if they did, then it was through hard labor. So, what's interesting about kibbutz members is that they have two as if counter qualities. They really want the togetherness, the connection, the kibbutz, but closed inside themselves, and they don't open outwards. And it's a result of the hard life, and it came as a result of many doubts and fears and suspicion towards everything going on the outside, the desire to protect themselves. It's not that, God forbid, I'm blaming them for something. They are people with a very hard character, even though that it is a collective kind of character. And we see that these two coincide in them. And I think that the problem was that they thought that it is possible to pass the kibbutz idea from father to son. They didn't understand that it can't be passed on this way, as it says that the Torah isn't passed in heritage. Yeah, from what I read, the disillusionment came when they watch their children fighting each for his own toy and so on. From what I read, they felt a sense of anguish that despite their efforts to pass on the qualities of communality onto their children, it didn't. Human nature. Man's nature is evil from the very start. That's how it is. They approach human nature like what I later on experienced in social Russia, that they thought that it's possible to change human nature by education, meaning the claims of capitalism that you're doing something which is against human nature were correct. Of course. And that's why capitalism survived. It also reached an end, like anything else in the world. But capitalism, it followed that very nature, which at that time bursted out of people, that was revealed in people, which is the simple, egoistic, direct, revealed force, which a person uses, of course, in a certain framework and according to certain laws, but it was possible. Meaning they did not take into consideration that their children aren't born ready with the kibbutz ideals. And you can't educate for that. It's impossible to educate for that. Because from generation to generation, there's a big leap in terms of the change in human nature and ego, because that's human nature, both in quantity and in quality, and what they thought and did with their children. What was good for them was no longer good for the children. It didn't work. And gradually, the entire method came to an end, exhausted itself. It was hard to accept it. The country kept them for a long time. They had big debts. I don't know how, but let's put it this way. The last few years of the kibbutz, In the end of the 70s, early 80s, they lived a lot at the expense of the country. And also it caused a kind of a collision between them and the general atmosphere in Israel. I remember that when I discovered it, it was very unpleasant to see these things. It was a very egoistic cooperative, meaning aside from our kibbutz, we don't care about anything. Everything else can burn. Only self-preservation, even though that they got many benefits from the country, on the one hand. On the other hand, there were strong people, strong soldiers. Back then, they really filled all the commanding positions in the army and so on. Like any other situation, you can look at it from different angles. However, human nature is changing. Man is an animal which changes from one generation to the next. And therefore, there's no real point talking about it. In our times, it barely exists in a way that you can call it a kibbutz, meaning an inner connection according to the inner desire, according to the inclination to be together. It's something completely different. It's a kind of a cooperative. There is even an urban kibbutz. There are different such forms, only in order to get some benefits from the country, pay less taxes, and so on. And therefore, they built these kinds of collective forms. But really, the original kind of the kibbutz no longer exists. And the thing is that the first people, they were very strong. I know, suppose, that we wanted, when I came, we wanted to join a kibbutz. It was in 1974. And when my wife saw that she has to give up our child, who's 2 years old, and to see him once a day for half an hour, I don't know how long, she didn't agree. And this was one of the main problems. In many kibbutzes back then, they demanded that the children be educated together, completely separately from the parents. And that's incorrect, really incorrect. We also know, according to researches, how much evil it puts into a person later on. It really creates a distortion in his attitude towards life. Even if you fill him with all riches, but he doesn't feel his mother's warmth, that she's next to him, that she cares for him. We're animals, one way or another, and it has to be like it is in nature. So to this day, the kibbutz is no longer in crisis. I think that's incorrect. It's not the same kibbutz, but only the name is left, maybe, like a showcase, externally wise, but on the inside, of course, it's completely different things. And I've examined several times the option of joining a kibbutz with our society, and I saw that they didn't accept us. No one accepted us. They said, where were you 20, 30 years ago? Meaning they saw that we're as if dinosaurs, even though that we consider ourselves to be new, having a new spirit in this respect, which is based on a special force, which we derive as a result of our connection, and by this special force, we can invert anyone turn anyone into a kibbutz member, not according to what they consider the kibbutz member, but according to human nature. But that spirit, nonetheless, to some extent, dwells in the country, and I very much respect this movement, even though that today it's neither in that or in this direction. It's not like it was in the past, that time's over, everything changed, and neither in the new direction, that they want to reinvent themselves. They already know and understand that they survive as much as they can this way, and if not, then here and there you see signs of privatization, and gradually they're changing their form. I watched this movie called The Last Fight for Dgania, and the director, from his research, he felt that the kibbutz should continue, but in a different model. He doesn't know what kind. Today, people are returning to the kibbutzes for economical reasons. Yeah, obviously, but only. And also, there are cooperative kibbutzes. There are about 70 of them in Israel. It means that this form still exists, and there's the matter of the renewing kibbutz, and I'd like to consult you on this. How to renew the kibbutz in the right way. But before that, I'd like to ask about those kibbutzes that are thinking whether to privatize or not, or hold on to the old ideology. There are people that are still somehow trying to keep this thing, make it work somehow, and alongside with them there are other people that their desire changed for some reason, they want different things. What would you tell us that we're in a phase where we have to decide either we allow this change to happen and we become a community settlement, or we try to keep to the values of the past? In any of the options that you gave, I don't see that any one of them is sustainable, that the situation is sustainable. First of all, a person always acts out of discovering the current state as bad, that he can't stay in it. He discovers that I can no longer be this way. I have to change. I have to make my environment closer, further away, everything that belongs to me, for it to be connected in a different way than it was before. Because I changed now. What I saw as good, now I see as bad, and vice versa. They can no longer exist according to the previous framework. All of them are right now as a person who's ending his life. What do you mean? They're dying. The idealists, obviously. And I also don't think that it will help them to keep these things in any way. The only thing that they can do is, out of their egoistic inclinations, to turn themselves into whatever they can according to the laws of the country, so it will be beneficial for them. So they'll pay less taxes and so on. They have lots of land, which today is worth lots of money. They can allow themselves to build there whatever they want, whereas in the city there's no such thing. Meaning, of course, they'll use it correctly, egoistically wise. It's not a kibbutz, and there's no point talking about it. That belongs to the past. I'm not offering them anything. I also don't think that it's possible to offer them anything. They are also still in a kind of a dream. I'm talking about the kibbutzes, that they can succeed in different other forms. They didn't live the capitalistic life through yet in order to reach a crisis, and only then will it be possible to talk to them about cooperation according to the laws of nature and not according to the Marxistic ideologies that they all had. Unfortunately, our time's up. It was fascinating. Thank you very much, Dr. Lightman. Thank you, Tal. Thanks for being with us. Till next time, all the best.